We need a real investigation. I don't think we have one yet.
Yes, it's true. And yes, it is a crime.
Well, thank you, Cleta Mitchell. Thank you for that explanation. Really interesting and kind of appalling.
Thank you,
really.
Tucker.
Cleta Mitchell is somebody with great courage, and she's involved with your litigation and lawsuits and all of this stuff. She literally gave up her whole practice not to get paid. She saw how corrupt it was, how disgusting it was, how dirty it was. And I want to thank you on behalf of everybody in this room and everybody in this country. You are a hell of a lawyer and tough. And that's what we need.
Welcome to Who's Counting, our podcast about all things related to elections, election integrity, how elections are supposed to be run, how sometimes they aren't operated or run the way they're supposed to be, and what we as citizens can do about it. And our guest today, I'm very honored to have as our guest, the amazing Gina Swoboda from Arizona.
Well, Gina, you're not originally from Arizona.
I am not. I am from Queens, New York.
But when did you come to Arizona?
It's about 28 years, okay, 29 years now. But the accent comes out when you get excited and the hands, you know, I'm Italian. I get the hand thing going on.
But Gina is... Well, she's an amazing person, and she's done so many things with regard to elections for a very long time. And I'm going to ask you about that. But first, how did you get from Queens to Arizona?
So my mother was an English teacher, which is why my accent is not quite as strong as it might otherwise be, because I am from Flushing. And you might have seen that show, The Nanny, and you know what that accent actually sounds like. But she switched to working for the airlines, like you did in the 70s, because being a public school educator was a difficult road once the Board of Ed came in. And we used to fly for free, and it was a beautiful thing. And I came to Arizona, and I was like 14, and I knew as soon as I could I was going to move here. And my husband came home. I took him here on our honeymoon.
Where did you have your honeymoon?
Here. In Scottsdale.
My husband and I had our honeymoon 38 years ago at the Arizona Biltmore.
Oh, you see? You see? This is a thing, people. And every day he came home from work and there was another piece of Southwestern decor. And one day he came home and there was like a Coco Pelli shower curtain. He was like, I take it we're moving to Arizona. I was like, oh, that's a fine idea. I had not thought of that. So, yes. And I've never looked back and I've never regretted it.
And
not for a minute.
He's happy too.
And he is happy. I promised him he would never have to shovel snow again, my lady. I'm no fool. And neither is my husband.
That's great. Well, so Gina, tell us about all of your experience with elections, and because you've done a little bit of everything with regard to elections.
I have. So I have always been passionate about elections. I love everything about the process. I'm a process-driven person. I started registering voters. I became a deputy registrar with the Maricopa County Recorder's Office. I went to work at the Secretary of State's office under the Reagan administration here in Arizona, Michelle Reagan. I started as a lobbying specialist. Working on election issues.
Wow.
Then I was the campaign finance and lobbying manager. We did customer service. We fill in the test ballots and fly all over the state, voting. And you're testing. Now, don't try this at home, folks, because this is only for a logic and accuracy test.
So you know all about the voting machines.
Yes.
And voting systems.
Yes.
What's wrong, what could go
yes.
wrong, and everything.
And, you know, candidate qualifications, initiative and ballot measure processing, everything from the top to the bottom and the bottom to the top.
Wow.
And after that, I was recruited to be the state director of election day operations for a candidate I believe we know and love. We miss you. And so I was able to run the poll observer program. So that was 2020, the big one.
How many poll observers did you have?
Over 5,000. We drove around the state. It's a big, beautiful state. The Constitution is the product that sells itself. It's not hard. The people came, and we trained them. We shifted them into their slots. They observed, we reported what they observed. That's a lot of the reason we know about process issues that could be improved is because of those reports. The people were passionately engaged, and I pray they continue to do so, to be so.
So after the 2020 election, you became involved in another project, and tell everybody what that is.
Yes. So I'm the executive director of the Voter Reference Foundation. So there was a beautiful website called voteref.com, VOTEREF, like Frank.com. And I am publishing the voter rolls online for free for the public forever for every state in the United States. The National Voter Registration Act says the public should have oversight to ensure that voter list maintenance is being done properly. These are public records. I would say that there are prohibitive expenses involved.
In some states.
For example, Virginia, the beautiful, beautiful Dominion. That's $20,000 for the voter registration file for a resident of Virginia. When you do get the file, it's a massive data set, and the average end user cannot process it, open it, read it. You would need to be a SQL server analyst, right? A SQL database analyst. So I think the intent of the National Voter Registration Act, the intent of our great nation has always been citizen participation and oversight. That's it. In order for the public to ensure the voter list maintenance is done correctly, they have to be able to see the voter list.
That's right.
So, you know, my role, my mission that I'm passionate about and that I love every day that I get to get up and do this is to publish those lists and ensure the public has free access to them.
But in Virginia, for instance, as you mentioned, it's $20,000 to purchase the rolls. And you have to sign something that says you won't give it to anybody else.
This is true.
And so that, to me, is a violation of the NVRA.
Yes, you cannot crowdsource. You cannot effectively work the list.
Well, the other thing about the list is it's not static. It's dynamic. It changes.
That's right.
Because people die. They move.
That's right.
New people register.
And this is, I say it's like a river, right?
Right.
So it's a constantly flowing river. And in most states, you have access to modify your record through motor vehicle online. So as we're sitting here, the voter rolls are changing. So if you did, as a member of the public, you know, take your nest egg of $20,000 and acquire the file, it would almost immediately be stale dated.
Right.
I think that's a public policy discussion worth having. I would wish that the election officials would do this themselves, okay?
Right.
And I am hopeful that with the work that we're doing at the foundation, it will encourage them to do so. Put it up. Put it up for the public to see. You know, put a portal on it, you know? Be in compliance with your state statutes, which we are. But allow the public to do the oversight that NVRA envisioned them doing.
What are some of the other states that put blockades? I think Maine,
Maine
say you can't have our voter.
You can't have it.
you can't have it.
California, you know, we don't want you to do anything with it. Arizona has a prohibition on the publication over the internet or sharing it over the internet. So a citizen of Arizona can acquire the file. So first of all, anybody can buy the file. You know, I don't have to be here in this country or a citizen of this state to acquire the file. I just have to pay and fill in a public records form. So you fill in your public records form. I'm going to use Arizona as an example. You pay if you get the file from the Secretary of State, pay about $500 if you want the whole file, and they send it to you. Well, you're not allowed to email any information from the file to anyone because you can't transmit it over the internet. So really, that's a statute. And there's a bill for that. There's a bill right now in the legislature to fix that. There are two. And they're out of the House and they're waiting on the Senate side.
And you've been working on those.
And I've been working on those. and you know, observers, we saw holes in the process. So just as a citizen, as a subject matter expert, this is all non-commercial, to be absolutely clear. It's a nonprofit foundation. I'm not, you know, looking to make profits off this information. This is just public records for the public to do their duty as citizens to be part of the oversight process.
I'll tell you one of the most interesting things to me about the last year and a half since the November 2020 election are the number of groups around the country of citizens who've just started looking at voter rolls. I talked to a gentleman last week from Georgia, and he and a group of people are working in a several county area, and they're just looking at the voter rolls and realizing that there are duplicate voter ID numbers, duplicate, so that one voter will have his name and his voter ID number duplicated.
Right.
And
that happens.
You know, so they are trying to get the registrars there to
to deal with that and to make just to get rid of that. Yes. And so it only makes sense to be able for people to have the voter rolls. And what you do, is there other information, other election data that you're trying to make available also to people?
I am. So as part of the voter rolls, you acquire the voter history, right? So this shows, it's called a voter credit. It's every election that you vote in, you get a credit on your file. Obviously, it doesn't show who you voted for. Thank God we have the secret ballot.
And we don't
We're
actually
not
care.
Interested.
We don't
this
care.
Is not a partisan issue. This is an integrity and transparency issue. So, but you get a voter credit, and that's important because if you don't vote for a certain amount of elections, your status will lapse from active to inactive. And if you stay in inactive and they start to send you mailers, and then, like, it depends on the state, if three go out and three come back, they'll eventually cancel your voter registration. So it's important that your status be accurate. So these voter credits show what elections, you know, you participated in. So on part of the site, on the election side, I'm comparing the total ballots that were cast according to the certified canvas, right, that was produced by the state election officials, and then running that number against the total number of voters in a jurisdiction who cast a ballot in that election according to the certified election data from those officials. And one would think that that number would reconcile, and it does not. So, and part of the reason for that is this flow of the river, right? People move, people go inactive. Okay, great. But again, let's go back to the National Voter Registration Act. It says that the records that directly pertain to the election are supposed to be retained for 22 months.
Right.
Does one not think the voter rolls pertain to, can you have an election if you don't have voter rolls? No. Every election begins with the voter roll, and then it comes full circle, and it ends with the voter roll with the vote credit. State after state after state, I have 20 states up now, they do not retain a snapshot, I call it a snapshot in time, of what the voter rolls look like on election day.
Oh my goodness.
I'm hit or miss, I'm trying to get as close as I can. If somebody pulled a FOIA for their rolls on that day, then they'll still have it. I'm getting a copy of that. And again, public policy discussion that needs to be had. Do we or do we not think that the National Voter Registration Act provision saying retain these records for 22 months applies to the very basis and foundation of the election, the voter rolls itself? I would posit that it does. I think most Americans believe that that data is retained. I believe most Americans believe that the data is reconciled the way any other business is, and it simply is not. So the discussion is in the hope to improve that process.
Well, it's interesting because the gentleman in Virginia was able to, I don't know if he paid the amount. Anyway, he looked at, it wasn't even the voter rolls. This is what he looked at. It goes to your point. He looked at the certified number that was posted by the Virginia State Board of Elections for November 3rd of 2020 as to how many absentee ballots were cast.
Okay.
And then they also post a spreadsheet that you can download that tells, you know, by jurisdiction. In Virginia, they call it units because sometimes it's a city and sometimes it's a county. So they call them units. And there's a column for how many absentee ballots were cast in each of those units. And he added them up. And then he looked at the total that the state reported. And he looked at the total that was added up. And there is a 40,000 plus vote delta.
Right.
Between what was
there's
reported.
There's a discrepancy.
There's
folks.
A discrepancy. And when he asked them, what is the discrepancy here?
Right.
They have still not been able to answer that.
And that's really the issue, right? Is
that's 40,000 ballots.
You need to be able to explain to the public, and you should want to know yourself. So when we do this total ballots cast, we do what I call election wide, right? We're not looking at a particular contest because there are people who will leave a contest blank. We're looking at a physical ballot. How many of these physical ballots, you know, were issued? So Virginia, and we love you, the State Board of Elections said, well, that number that we have up on our site, on our official State Board of Elections site, is not really an official number. Because they said, well, there's no statute that requires us to have the official number of how many ballots were cast election-wide. The canvas is telling you race by race. So I said, well, you tell the Elections Assistance Commission in your report to this federal agency who's tasked with assisting in elections, that this is what the number is. And that number comes directly from your county. So are you saying that the data that you got from your counties that you sent to the federal agency was invalid? And then there was no response. That was the end of the conversation. So they do have that number, but it's difficult. It's difficult for them. But it's a matter of instilling public confidence. You know, people need to understand how the process works. The election officials need to reconcile the books. They should be retaining that data. And it's a beautiful process. We're the greatest nation on earth, but it's only as good as the people believe it is. And if the people are telling you that they don't believe in the process, then you have to adjust and show, right? Give us the transparency. And unfortunately, some of the officials have reacted in a defensive way. And I feel for them, and I love them. I was one of them. But we need to speak to the people where the people are, not where we think the people should be.
Right.
It's our duty to make the public aware and informed and empowered with the tools to know.
So you're empowering citizens by obtaining and making the voter rolls and voter histories available to them for them to then look at, examine, and
yes.
And it will be up to them and people like Fight Voter Fraud with Lynn Wolkowitz to be able
Fantastic.
To deploy those and to take that base data and then do further research.
Yes. I mean, it's this country is built on citizen participation.
It is.
That's what it's about.
Yeah.
And I think for a long time, people weren't engaged maybe actively in the elections process. And the irony here is I have listened to for many years, and I'm one of those people that despaired, oh, when will the public pay attention to the elections process? Well, you be careful what you ask for. Here we are. The public is here. They're ready. Educate the public. Empower them. You know, don't be frustrated that they're coming to you with questions. That's what you want. Let's put out the data. And it's, again, it's the certified data from the election officials. There's been no alteration. On the site in each state, you can see the public records request, you can see the cover letter that came back, and you can see the date. So this is your full chain of custody of what happened with this data file.
And so your website is voteref.com.
Yes.
V-O-T-E-R-E-F.com.
Yes.
Voteref.com. And people
exactly.
can go there and they can look and get their
yes.
states or their county or whatever.
And you can look by state, you can look by county, you can look up an address and see how many people are registered at that address. You can look up at a name and you can see in the states that are live right now, anybody by that name that has a voter registration record mm-hmm. will come up. And then you can click on that link and you can see the vote history for the credits. So, you know, I moved from New York, right, 28 years ago. Being a process-oriented elections geek, I immediately canceled my voter registration. Some people move, and it's a stressful thing in life, right? One of the top three stressful things in life is moving. People will forget. So if you have moved, you can go and look up your record and make sure that it is canceled. And if you look and it is still active, you need to contact that board of elections, and you need to let them know that you have moved so that that's canceled. So a simple thing like that, if every American did that, that has moved around, we would be cleaning up the roll lickety-split.
Well, assuming that the people would actually, who run the election offices would actually take this step.
Process. Would process your cancellation request? Yes,
We need to make sure that people who do, moving companies who create, here's your checklist for moving, we need to get them to add cancel voter registration to
Absolutely.
The list.
Absolutely.
That would be something they can do.
And there are people who might be part-time residents. You know, we have a lot of snowbirds in many states. There are states with automatic voter registration. There are people who do not realize if they have moved into a state and they're only there part of the year, they might have become registered to vote and not even known and might still have their primary residence in another state. So again, we have to take ownership of our own voter registration record. If every American does this, there will not be an issue. So look up your own record. Make sure you haven't been registered in a place you don't want to be and that where you left it has been canceled.
So I want to pivot for just a moment because you're a woman of many talents. And one of those is that you have been amazingly effective in getting some bills passed in the Arizona legislature. And talk a little bit about the big one, which is going to be on the ballot and having to do with voter ID.
The Voter ID Act, bill of my heart. So the Arizona Free Enterprise Club, an amazing organization here on the ground, ran a ballot measure. So Arizona is one of the states, a lot of Western states have this ability to, the people can make law, right? You don't have to go through the legislature. If you can collect enough signatures, you can get something on the ballot, and then the people can decide. And in Arizona, we had this ballot measure brought by the Arizona Free Enterprise Club, the Voter ID Act. In Arizona, we've had mail voting for a long time. We do it very well. I would say, this is my personal view, is that signature verification alone is highly problematic to verify identity. It is completely subjective. We have 15 counties in Arizona. There is nothing in the statute that says you must have 15 points must match on the signature. That doesn't exist. It just says your signature is your ID for the purpose of a mail ballot. What that means is, you know, you could be getting treated differently as a voter in a different county because they're using, you know, different degree of matching what they consider to be a match. That's a problem, right?
Or maybe no matching at all.
Or maybe no matching at all. So one would hope and pray not, but you never know. So the Voter ID Act initiative that we were collecting signatures requires you to add your date of birth. You have your signature remains, and you also have to have your driver's license number or the last 4 years social or your non-operator ID or your voter ID number, okay? As those signatures were being collected, Senator J.D. Mesnard and Representative John Fillmore agreed to do strikers on their bill. So a striker in Arizona is when you scoop out the language of your bill and you replace it with something else. They put the Voter ID Act language on a bill in the Senate and a bill in the House, passed out of the House, passed out of the Senate, was amended. The County Lobbying Association, ACO, said, hey, we already bought the envelopes for the 2023 jurisdictional election, so we cannot change things now. And Free Enterprise said, okay, we'll have it go into effect in 24. And it passed, and it is so it's now a referendum. If something comes from the legislature to go to the ballot, that's called a referendum. So you don't need all these signature collection and validation to happen now to have that ballot measure on. It is going to be on the ballot in 2022 as a referendum. The people are going to be heard. This polls very well nationwide. The amazing Jason Sneed of Honest Elections Project polls this constantly all across the country. AZ Free Enterprise has done polling in Arizona. A majority of every single demographic supports voter ID. They support additional ID requirements on these mail ballots, and I believe it will pass. I believe it will be one of the highest pass rates of any referendum ever run in Arizona, and it's just going to be a glorious thing.
The only thing I worry about is that there's a small group of leftists who oppose voter ID, and I predict that they're going to run a campaign that will completely change the subject and talk about it as somehow identity theft. I hope that everybody will be prepared to really fight back. We have to have people really understand that's going to be a very big misinformation campaign.
There is. I would say in some counties, Yavapai is one of them, the mail ballot affidavit that we have right now is on the envelope, right? There's an affidavit and you sign your name. In Yavapai, they have a privacy envelope. So inside the outer envelope is the inner envelope that has your information and a barcode and your signature. In Maricopa, they don't have a privacy envelope, so everybody who's mailing a ballot, everybody's got your signature. So think, if you will, about the fact that your signature is being used to verify your identity on a mail ballot, and your signature is just flying around through the system, out there waiting for a postal worker to pick it up, and everywhere else it is. So that's already an issue. I get that a lot about the voter list as well. We live in a time, I grew up, in the 80s. I had a TRS-80 in the sixth grade. It didn't watch me. I didn't have a phone. If I told my mother where I was, she didn't know where I was. I'll call from a payphone. I'm at Lisa's house. My mother didn't know where I was. Now your parents are tracking you everywhere. You can go online and pay $20 and find out all about a person. These are things that are required to secure the sanctity of the vote. That people say this all the time. I mean it from my heart. I know you do as well, my lady. This is a hard fought for honor, duty, sacred privilege that we have this voice in our process. If they need a privacy envelope, fine. Government's not supposed to do a lot of what they're doing, enumerated powers, am I right? But don't tell me what the temperature is outside the sidewalk in Arizona State. spend the money to put the privacy envelope on to secure that data. The county recorders already have this data, everybody. You registered to vote, you gave it to them. So put it on there, put it in an outer envelope. I'm happy to give them an appropriation bill.
I think that's a good idea. And I think that they can use HAVA money from the EAC to provide privacy envelopes.
Yes.
We should start a movement for them to do that.
I'm on it.
So, but Gina, talk a little bit about the Arizona Summit coming up.
Oh, I love this. The amazing Cleta Mitchell and the Conservative Partnership Institute are putting together state summits, okay? The Elections Integrity Network is a core part of this mission to go to states to empower the grassroots with the tools, with the training, how to create your own election integrity network within your state, have your own team. You know, monitor the elections equipment, know when elections equipment certification is, know when the logic and accuracy testing is taking place, you're allowed to be there. Understand the voter list maintenance, how does it work? A lot of people think if someone moves and the mail ballot comes back for the county recorder that they're going to cancel the voter registration. No, they are not. They are not going to do that. They are going to wait. They're going to send mailers out. You're going to be inactive. You'll be on there for two election cycles or 4 years. So we want to empower people with the knowledge of how the process works. Help teach them to coordinate with others in their area to form a team or a node, if you will, and just give them the tools to monitor the process so that they have an understanding, they're ready for when things are happening, they can work as poll workers, they can be poll observers, and that's really the only way to restore their faith in the process, is for them to be a part of the process, and that's always how it's meant to be.
Well, you've been a wonderful partner and a wonderful leader, and we'll give a full report of the summit to everyone at a future time. Hope you'll come back and tell us about that. And we want people to go to your website, voteref.com.
Yes.
And we want people to get involved, get engaged. You can do this at your own computer. And as Gina says, I mean, the election system was really it really envisions citizen participation. It envisions a role for all of us. And that's what we're trying to do, is empower people. And we are so grateful to have people like Gina, you're a unicorn. I don't know in the whole country. I mean, I don't think there's anyone quite like you who has wide range of experience and expertise in every aspect of this. So you're really wonderful to share your talents with us and help us save our country in the process. So thank you so much for being with us. And thank you for joining us. Thank you. Be sure and watch this episode and share it with your friends. Subscribe to Who's Counting with Cleta Mitchell, our podcast. Visit our website, www.whoscounting.us. And find out news about what is going on in election integrity around the country. And look at our events. Download the Citizen's Guide to Building an Election Integrity Infrastructure, and become part of the process to save our elections and save our country. And with that,
thank you for listening to Who's Counting. The Who's Counting podcast is produced by the Conservative Partnership Institute's Election Integrity Network. It is founded and recorded at CEO Studios in Washington.
It's my pleasure.
Help us grow this show by sharing this episode with a friend. And be sure to subscribe and to give us a good review. We need your word of mouth, because big tech can't be trusted and tries to cancel us daily. Help fight back by visiting whoscounting.us and sign up for this podcast, for our newsletter, become part of the Election Integrity Network.
No one will catch me. Of course, I'm actually from New York.